Hi everybody, this is Schiff Captain Mannschaft, the podcast about sailing, seamanship and sailboats. I am Bernhard Fischer and this is my podcast for all sailors. Actually, some of you now might wonder why this is in English, and the reason is pretty simple. Today this is an interview podcast and I have a Norwegian sailor in the interview, and thus I decided to do the whole podcast in English. All of us know the Vikings, those brave and strong and tall men who lived far up in the north. Mainly their home was whole Scandinavia, so mostly Norway and Sweden, but they settled on different places all over Europe. They are also known for their seafaring qualities. They built those well-known Viking ships. Those could be rowed or sailed with a square main sail. Actually, those were open boats, so there was no cabin, no place to hide in heavy weather. And with these open ships, they crossed the North Atlantic, they conquered Great Britain, they settled on the Faroe Islands, they settled even on Iceland and on Greenland, and today it's even thought that they have reached Newfoundland on the North American continent. With their boats, they sailed into the Mediterranean Sea, and the boats were so flat that they even could sail up rivers. There is a pretty interesting project, it's called the Draken Harald Harfagre, and it's a Viking ship which is built today, so it's a new boat. It's not a copy of something that was found, it's a completely new boat, but it's built after what we know that Vikings built their ship at the time then. And this boat is actually sailing around the world. They crossed the Atlantic Ocean several times. And one part of the project is that they even try to wear clothes that we think today that the Vikings wear it at the time then. Of course, you find the link in the show notes down below. If you think that the Vikings have disappeared a long time ago, then you are wrong. The spirit and the boldness is still alive in some Norwegians. And there is one who constantly seeks new challenges, and probably he is a descendant of a once well-known seafaring Viking. His name is Erik Andara, and I have him today in the interview. Erik lives on the southwest coast of Norway, and he owns his own boat. Actually, it's a 35-foot Contessa. And of course, he regularly sails out to the Atlantic. And what he is doing is not just day sailing and drinking beer. He's really challenging himself and showing cool stuff. Actually, I found Erik on YouTube. He produces amazing videos, which I can strongly recommend to everybody, independently if you're a sailor or not. In his videos, he sails out and documents everything, and you can actually see every step he makes, and he comments it also and films everything from a lot of perspectives. And it's not just the story of a hero doing great stuff, it's a story of somebody who is a real human and who also experiences sometimes probably fear or makes mistakes or stuff like that. Every year he sails from his hometown in Norway across the North Atlantic to the Shetland Islands to attend to a Viking festival. This is actually a distance of 200 miles, and that's probably not the big challenge if that would be in July, but the festival every year is in January. So Erik crosses every year over the North Atlantic in probably the worst month you can choose over to the Shetland Islands. He is not a man of many words, but he is a man of action who pushes constantly himself and his boat towards new adventures. Let's listen to the interview. Thank you very much that you found your time for doing this. It's really great. Well, probably let's first stick to a current topic. It was pretty windy the last days, even in Austria here. So there was this big depression. In England, they called it Ciara. I don't know what the name was in Norway.
Yeah, it was the same anyway.
Yeah, and there is a fun fact. In Germany, they call it Sabine. And I always thought that this is the names are chosen somehow internationally, but now I found out that in Germany you can buy names of depressions, and so they sold it already to somebody, so they renamed it to Sabine. However, it was pretty windy. I guess I watched it a little bit on the windy. It was even extremely windy in southwest Norway.
Yes, it was southwest. Yes, it was a high water level as well.
Okay, so huge waves and well, probably some emergency cases, or hopefully not. Okay, so the next I think the next is forming already. But however, let's talk a little bit about you. I actually found your videos about, I'm not really sure, 1 year ago, I think, like that, roughly 1 year ago on YouTube. Pretty impressed of what you're doing. It's cool stuff. And actually, I found you because one of the videos says it's titled Crossing the North Atlantic or something like that. And I started to work on a project which deals with sailing in North Atlantic. So that's how I found you, by accident, actually. But meanwhile, I saw a lot of your videos and really cool stuff. So I decided to do this podcast. Because I create a podcast since 1.5 year, but it's in German. So let's talk a little bit about you. So actually, how did you come to sailing? So probably it's obvious for if a Norwegian lives there to go sailing, but not all Austrians are going skiing. So probably that's true for Norwegians also. So how did you come to sailing actually?
Well, it was my father was buying me a little dinghy when I was 11 years old, and I was kind of forced to try it out because he wanted me to try it out, to have a small boat to be able to fish from the boat and stuff, you know. So started up, I guess, from there, and I learned how to sail that little dinghy, and yeah, I got hooked, I guess.
Okay, so you were dinghy sailing with your father for to learn to fish and sail, and that's it. And at some point, you decided to buy a boat when you was grown up.
Yeah, I got hooked in sailing by that little dinghy then, because I was sailing around on the flat water, and I wanted more. I wanted to see more, and I'm a pretty adventurous guy. I've always been that since I was a kid. So I started out buying a bigger boat, and bigger and bigger, and at the end, I ended up with the one I got now. At age 24, I think I bought Tessie, this last one.
Okay, this is a 35 foot Contessa. I think you showed it in the last video.
Yeah, right.
And how long do you sail with this boat?
I've had it for 16 years now. I've been down to Malaga in Spain. I sailed solo alone down in 2006 and 7.
So, and have you been to the Mediterranean also with it?
I have been, yeah. I was about to cross the Atlantic Ocean to Caribbean, but the weather was just too bad, so I turned around and
Okay.
headed back to Norway.
Okay, but probably time will come. Do you intend to retry the Atlantic crossing, I mean?
No, not in the nearest future. I'm having some other plans coming up, so I like it better up in the cold weather in the North Atlantic.
Yeah, I know, but the new project, I already saw the preview videos, of course. Then once you did it, then crossing the Atlantic on the trade winds is probably boring.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it's 3 weeks with the same wind direction and the 30 degrees Celsius, so it's gonna be 3 long weeks, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if it's the same in English, but in German you say it's a bear barefoot route actually, so because you're barefoot without shoes there. Okay, so you also showed in the last videos actually you are let's say safety professional, a training professional at this rescue center in Haugesund.
Yes, I've been there for 8 years now, since 2012. So I've been I work with the safety and preparedness within ships and platforms, showing them how to survive if things go wrong.
Okay, and how did you come to this job? So actually, don't you require some kind of let's say experience? Did you go there and say, so I'm a sailor and now want to become safety instructor, or how did that work?
Well, yeah, pretty much. They want the peoples that have experience from ships and platforms, and I have been working on ships before for 12, 13 years, so I have a good experience from there. So it fitted in pretty good with the safety preparedness center.
Okay, so I didn't got that point first. Okay, so you actually several years experience on the ships. Okay, and what do you do exactly there at the training center? What's your expertise or your job there?
Well, my job is to give courses within lifeboats and man overboard boats, maneuvering and how to operate it if somebody falls to the sea, man overboard. And helicopter evacuation, we do. You know, turn the simulator around and dip it into the water, and the passengers have to find their way out through the windows. And fire techniques and how to put out fires. It's a lot of different stuff, actually.
It sounds pretty interesting. I actually I had a look at the homepage of the rescue center, and they offer huge different types of courses what you can do there. I guess the participants are mostly professionals from shipping and, as you said, oil platforms and stuff like that. Are sailors, so let's say sailors also attending courses there.
Yeah, you mean sailors from ships or from sailboats?
From sailboats.
No, it's only for the professional from ships
Okay, yeah.
and oil platforms.
However, so you're perfectly prepared, and do you personally or the rescue center do they do real emergency cases also if there is whatever emergency case in a storm, or is it the training center only?
It's only training, yes.
Have you been in a real emergency case attending at some time?
No, I've been no, not myself, but I've been part of rescuing other ships that have been in troubles.
Okay, pretty interesting. Actually, the training center interested me so much that I almost think about attending one of these courses. It's because so I'm a sailing boat sailor, and there are a lot of courses about safety and so on, but all that is for cruising sailors, 1 or 2 day courses, but not so real professional courses with helicopters and all that stuff. But I'm really interested in that. Okay.
Cool. Yeah.
You showed you showed I think the first video I saw was a crossing to the Shetland Islands. I think it's the one which is called Crossing the North Atlantic. So you went to this festival, Viking festival.
Yeah, right.
Don't know exactly when it was, but it's actually in January, and you was there this year also, so two weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Actually, how did you come to the idea to in January cross the Atlantic? It's I would say not the time that a sailor crosses the North Atlantic.
Yeah, well, I've heard about the festival, this Viking festival called Uphelia on Shetland. So I've known it for many years, but I don't really wanted to participate. So just in 2017, me and my friend Sigur, he was a colleague at Rescue with his own sailboat. So we just plunged in it, and we made a deal to sail together in each our boat alone to this festival, and it's in the last Tuesday in January every year. So we had to do it, and we did.
Did your friend Sigur also sail so in parallel?
Yeah, well, he has a slight faster boat, so he was in 3 hours before me, so he slipped away from me pretty fast.
That's good. And what about your other friends, not from the rescue center? Don't they, or your family, don't they think that you're crazy doing stuff like that in January?
Yeah, pretty much, yes, they do. Especially my mother.
Okay, I believe that.
Yeah.
So 2007 is was the first time, and you since then you got every year there in January.
Yeah, this was the third time now. So I've been there in 17, 19, and 20. So this is the third time.
Okay, and actually, how do you deal with fatigue? So it's about 200 miles, but so I don't know exactly 30, 40 hours like that, but you can't stay awake all the time. And how do you deal with that?
I just rest down on the couch on the in the saloon for maybe 10-15 minutes, then I go up again, and then it's up and down. I don't have any routine actually. It's just take it as it comes, but I get all the sleep I need when I get to Shetland in 30 hours.
Okay,
It's not too bad.
so that really works. So you trust in your I don't know, in your feeling that you'll be awake in 15 minutes, and that worked perfect last trips.
Yeah, it's not possible to sleep because you're listening to sounds all the way and the movements of the boat. So it's yeah, it's not possible to sleep when you're alone. Not for me.
Okay.
I'm on guard all the time.
And you say you're really not totally totally exhausted after this 30, 40 hours.
No, I go straight to the pub when I come to Shetland. Then I go to
Okay. Okay. I think this will be interesting when heading to Greenland with your next trip. But however, we will see. What let's see the let's talk about this later, but first, so you head to the Shetland Islands and then back, and how was it this year? I'm actually, to be honest, I missed it a little bit, but I think the weather was pretty windy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was southwest 30 knots all the way over, so it was pretty heavy, yes, everything on the nose. But I was lucky to keep the bow on Shetland all the way, so I didn't have to tack. But it was a rough trip, yeah.
And the other way, was it the same or
Just the same, wind all the way on the nose.
and is your friend also going with you? So or was it just the first time?
That was just the first time. I've been alone the two second times I was alone.
Okay. And did you so of course, you collect experience while doing this, so compared to the first time you did it, what did you improve, or was everything perfect at the first time?
Well, it all depends on the wind direction, but the first time it was very windy, but I had a wind from south, so I had it a little bit aft of my beam, so that was not bad at all. But this time it was on the nose, and that's a whole other game because it's much colder because you get the water over the boat all the time, and if you stay in the cockpit, you suddenly get a big shower and you're just completely wet. Have to go down and dry up, and then out again, and then another wave comes. So it's many different kinds of experiences based on where the wind is coming from and waves.
Okay, but this is actually mentally to you, and of course, and physically because of the water and because of its cold. And the boat is in the same condition more or less, or did you improve? So I know there you showed several improvements, but that's I think because of the new trip you will do and.
Yeah, well, I got a third reef in the mainsail. That's pretty much everything I did from 2010. I got a radar to see the surroundings, and yeah, that's about it for safety measures, I guess. But I'm mostly used to sailing. I've been sailing the boat for 16 years alone, all over Europe. So I'm pretty used to it.
Okay, yeah, and actually, so I always have crew, so it's completely different. I always have crew when I sail, and but actually, you somehow infected me with the idea of solo sailing, and I already thought about it a little bit. And my fear would be, what about other ships? Is there no traffic? So. Or is there not so much traffic that some accident could happen? So specifically when you're down and go to sleep, okay, you're already explained, you just are down for, let's say, 15 minutes. But if it's longer, is there no traffic there crossing to the Shetlands?
Well, on this crossing, I saw one ship about in the middle of the ocean. That was it. But it's a lot of boats in the North Sea. But in average, it takes about 15 to 20 minutes before you see a ship in the horizon until it's potential danger for your boat. So that's why I don't fall asleep for more than 15 minutes at a time. Then I go up and check around me, and then I go down again and have another 15 minutes. So I'm constantly on alert and I'm watching for ships. And I have my radar on at 4 to 6 miles around me as well, picking up boats. Mm-hmm. So I feel pretty good about it.
Well, yes, with this 15-minute rhythm, I believe that it sounds good. I already thought about this idea, and I thought, what is if I go to sleep for 1 hour like this? So, as I said, I have no idea about solo sailing. But, well, yes, probably we have to change the rhythm. Okay. At one time you also headed over to the Faroe Islands. Was it a separate trip? So from your video, I know there is at least one really great video where you show your trip to the Faroe Islands. Did you do this after Shetland, or was it a separate trip from Norway?
Well, it was a separate trip, but it was a continuing trip from the Shetland, because I left the boat on Shetland in January, and then I came back in March, I think, to proceed to Faroe.
Ah, okay. So it was not directly in winter. So
no, it was Eastern April, I think, March or April sometime.
Okay, the weather will be then not so heavy, I think, in on average than in January in the North Sea.
No, it's better. Yeah.
Okay, and you went to the Faroe, and then back directly to Norway again.
Faroe. I went back to Shetland, and then from there to Norway.
Okay,
one go.
Stop by. Okay. So let's. Well, as I said, your videos are really very nice. I found one where you showed all that equipment that you use, so a lot of cameras and GoPros and all that. But still, it's really professional video editing. So, did you do? Is it a do-it-yourself try for error, or do you have somebody who taught you a little bit about video editing and all that?
I taught everything myself from the start, but a lot of YouTube tutorials, I guess, a couple of hundreds of hours watching
okay.
how to. So, but yes, self-taught all the way.
And you need all the material, of course. So when you try to film a scene, do you prepare this in the way that, let's say, you're on the way to Shetland, for example, and do you think, so now I'm try to make a video, and you put all the cameras out and film it, and then you say something, and then you put it away again, or are the cameras permanently filming, and does it happen, let's say, in between everything of everything else?
I don't plan any. The only thing I plan is the start when the video, start of the video when I talk. I have to do, make something say something funny in the start and after that it's just by accident, you know, all the way over. And yeah, if something occurs, something happens, I quickly take the cameras up and I try to film it.
Okay, I understand, yeah. Because it looks really in the way that really professionally edited. So you show the waves, and then there's a cut, and it shows the boat from, let's say, from the mast top, and then from the front and from the back, and cut by cut, it looks like if there is a camera team of, five people doing all that. Okay.
Yes, it's all in the cut, yeah.
Let's talk about your new challenge. Actually, you have this preview video in launched in December or something like that, and there was in January before you went to Shetland. There is the where you talk about the safety equipment. And at the beginning of the video, in the first seconds, in the first 10 seconds, there is you show a route where you head over to your Greenland. So that's actually your new challenge. Let's tell me a little bit about the plan, or as far as the plan is ready or ready to talk about.
Well, the plan is ready, so I just need July to come here now because I'm ready, and the boat is about ready. So yeah, I'm going to Greenland. I always dreamed about seeing Greenland and the icebergs and the people living there. Been a lifelong dream, so now it's hopefully going to happen.
And how did you plan the route actually? So there's just a short preview, a few seconds. So you head up north on Norway and then cross to Jan Mayen, and somehow how exactly did you plan that?
I'm going to the north of Norway because it's obviously a shorter ocean route from north of Norway to Jan Mayen to shorten down the ocean stretch. And it's also because I really want to see the islands in the north of Norway, the Værøy and Lofoten.
Lofoten.
Lofoten, yes. And the wind direction is more preferable up in the north to get over to Jan Mayen than if I should start from Haugesund. So it's for geographical reasons, I guess.
Okay, and so you head to Lofoten and the other islands, and then so it's also probably because of the currents, or didn't you care about that?
Now the currents is what it is, but it's the wind I'm thinking about to get better, preferable wind directions up there.
Okay, yes, the after the first seconds of your video, I cried, oh no, when I watched it, because my wife was sitting beside me. This is because Jan Mayen is on my list of islands that I want to visit with the sailboat at some time. They said, oh no, he does it. Well, yeah, actually there is nobody knows that today, but in 1882 there was a important Austrian polar station there, an observation station for, well, temperature and climate and stuff like that. And somebody, yes, I read somewhere that the remains of this station can be seen even today. However,
Well, good for it.
From Jan Mayen, you cross over to Greenland then directly. Do you have a goal, a specific destination, or just hit the coast somewhere?
I'm going to a place. It's a different, difficult name. It's a little place called Itukurtumit. It's at the beginning of the Scoresby Sound. You can see the huge fjord.
Yes, Scoresby Sound. It's well known, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going in there, and the only city in there is the Itukurtumit. It's about 500 people, and it's very remote location. So that's where I'm heading.
That's interesting. So, well, it's said that the eastern coast of Greenland is one of the most inaccessible coasts of the world because, well, of the ice and the Greenland current, which may bring ice all the year, stuff like that. Now, what do you expect actually from the trip?
I really don't know. I'm the type of guy, I just plunge in and I go away, I go in and I see what happens. But I don't know. It's gonna be a challenge from Jan Mayen and closing into the shores of Greenland. I don't know if they're gonna hit icebergs or rocks, or maybe I don't see anything. Maybe it's all melted. I have no idea. But I watch the ice charts pretty often to see how the ice moves right now in present. So, but you never know what's next year is going to be like. You just have to go and have a go.
Okay, yeah, so that you are trying to teach yourself to read the ice charts correctly and to predict what will happen. Did you think about communication systems? So obviously there is no VHF, so you need satellite or HF radio, or if you're there.
Yeah, I have this in-reach satellite device, a tracker. You can send and receive messages on it. So I'm going to rely on a person on land to give me proper weather reports. And yeah, if I need anything else, I'll have the communication on that. That's the satellite.
Ah,
It's
okay,
satellite.
yeah, okay, but it's just for text messages, so you can't receive a surface pressure chart, pressure chart or something like that.
Yeah, right. And I can also receive pretty simple weather reports as well. But the safest is to get someone I know from shore to give me the proper reports by message.
Okay, yes, that would have been my next question. How do you do weather routing or plan to do the weather routing in this situation then? So you trust on somebody who knows how to interpret the weather and weather patterns and give you advice when you're on the way.
Yeah, that's right. That's the plan.
Okay, well, so I'm also pretty excited. So in July you start, your boat is ready.
Yeah, I'm gonna need a new mainsail, and I'm gonna change the aft stay and the top stays on the mast. And after that, I think I'm pretty good. Some minor repairs, but that's what I will do. So I think we are all good for July.
Okay, actually what you show is, let's say, pretty crazy stuff. So let's say pretty windy, huge waves and all that. Is everything so don't there happen accidents, or did you have any accidents there? Does everything go well? So even there's the Force 10 video and stuff like that. So I always wonder if there do things break or something other bad happens.
No, I haven't have any major accidents yet. I think the trick is to respect the ocean and the forces, and just don't have too much sail up, and just be careful and go slow rather than go fast, and just think ahead what can happen, and you're pretty good. Just don't take chances. Don't fight nature. You will lose. So just play along with it as good as you can.
Well, yes, of course, but the devil does not sleep, so the best captains had accidents even if they try to foresee everything, because sometimes shit happens, as yeah Okay, so you had, let's say, luck. Of course, you foresee, try to prevent from everything. There is one thing interesting. You showed a picture where a boat, I think it's the boat from the, you have now, was thrown on the on the rocks.
Yeah, that was a major incident. Was 2011, I think. No, before that. Yeah, about 2011. I didn't have proper clothes on me, so I was going out in some wintry weather, high winds and high waves, and I got soaked and wet and almost froze to death. So I crashed the boat onto the shore, as the picture shows, and that's due to my body was stopped working because of coldness, hypothermia.
Okay, but n now actually you have everything you need for cold weather, I think. You're well prepared.
Oh yeah, I have all the I'm learning by doing, so it's not going to happen again. I have all the things I need now to stay warm.
You showed a lot of safety equipment. Did you how did you choose actually the safety equipment that is it because of your professional career in the rescue center, or do you just read books about, let's say, crossing the North Atlantic with a sailboat?
Well, the equipment I have aboard is pretty basic. I have this just a life raft and a survival suit and emergency location beacon, this EPIRB, and yeah, inReach satellite device. So it's nothing fancy, but it's the basic you that will luckily or hopefully make you be found if you get lost or need help.
A complete different question now, because it just came into my mind. You have this radar, which is not mounted on the mast, but it's freely mounted somewhere on the back. Does this work?
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's amazing. It's the radar is always level to the sea, so no matter the movements of the boat, you will always have a pretty clear radar picture.
And it's not, and the picture is not shaking or something like that that you see on the display.
No, it's very really good. I can see boats pretty stable in high waves far away.
Okay, that's a pretty cool idea. I've never seen that before, to be honest. Okay, although I did not research about radar, but it's a pretty cool idea, and I wonder why others don't do that. Is this did you is this your personal invention or is that out of the box sold somewhere in Norway? I've really never seen that.
It's out of the box, yes. It's for sale. It's pretty expensive, so I can see why not everybody just runs and buys it. It's expensive.
Okay, so I will have a look at vendors what they sell because I actually have never seen that before. Not even heard that
Right.
this is possible, although it absolutely makes sense. Okay, so thank you very much. Actually, is I'm pretty excited, and I hope that the July will come as soon as possible.
Yeah, me too.
Because also I think it will take a long time until the first video will be available. Finally, if I ask you, so as I said before, I'm also started to work on in that North Atlantic project. If I ask you at somebody that has really much experience about sailing in bad conditions on the North Atlantic, if I ask you for three things to bring with on the boat or to put on a boat or yourself or whatever, what would that three things be?
I would say well, it's not exactly what you ask for, but I would say stay warm, stay not hungry, and stay dry. That's the three things that keeps me going on board.
Okay, that's but I think it's really important. That's good. Thank you very much. So when I will, and I'm sure I will do it, when also I originally didn't, I have a route also already in my mind at least, but I already rerouted me to Haugesund. One time I will stop by and shake your hands. So
Yeah.
actually, I hope everything works, and I will, of course, watch your videos and stay tuned. And fair winds for your trip to Greenland. Thank you very much for your interview. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, it's really nice. Thank you. Maybe I see you soon then, sometime.
Okay, of course. Goodbye. See you.
All right. Goodbye. See you. Bye-bye.
So that's it. I think it's a perfect advice to keep your body in good condition, specifically when sailing in harsh conditions. I'd like to emphasize this again. People who took one of my sail courses in the past probably remember that I emphasized to keep your body in good condition, meaning try to sleep enough and try to eat enough, of course, and try to stay dry. Of course, in the North Atlantic, this is much more important than in the Mediterranean Sea, obviously because the temperatures are by far lower. But believe me, when crossing the Mediterranean Sea in December, it can still be very cold and it can be very wet and exhausting. I'd like to explain a little bit about the locations that we talked about to all listeners who are not so familiar with the region up there in the north. The starting point that Eric talked about and is almost also in the videos, mostly the starting point is Haugesund. This is a town on the southwest end of Norway, and it's pretty opposite of the Shetland Islands. From Haugesund to the Shetland Islands, which is the town of Lerwick, this is about 200 nautical miles. Then we mentioned the Fair Isle and the Faroe Islands. Actually, the first one is a pretty isolated small island, about 40 nautical miles south of Lerwick, and this is almost halfway to Scotland in the south. So from Lerwick to the Faroe Islands, which is the town of Torshavn, is another 200 nautical miles. Then we talked about the Lofoten. The Lofoten is a group of islands in the north of Norway. It's actually above the Arctic Circle. And to sail from Haugesund to the Lofoten, it's about 650 miles. The Lofoten actually are not far away from Tromsø. Depending on where you are in the Lofoten, it's about 100 nautical miles. Tromsø would be a good starting point for heading to Svalbard. So Eric actually intends to head over to Jan Mayen from the Lofoten. This is about 500 to 550 miles, depending on where exactly he starts. The course is about west-northwest, and Jan Mayen actually is a pretty small island in the middle of the Arctic Ocean. There is nothing all around. So who wants to look for the island now? It's about 71 degrees north and 8.5 degrees west. If we continue the trip for another 270 miles, more or less directly to the west, we will have landfall on Greenland. There is the town Ittoqqortoormiit. It's, as Eric mentioned, on the northeast entrance point to the Scoresby Sound. And the Scoresby Sound seems to be the first sound which does open from the ice in summer. So the whole coast of Greenland further north is the whole year closed with fast ice. So that's actually the reason why it is such an inaccessible coast. And the reason for this is that because of the ocean currents, actually there are in the Arctic Ocean there are two important currents, so actually at this part of the ocean that we are talking about. So on the eastern side, there is the well-known Gulf Stream. And the Gulf Stream actually is responsible that Norway is inhabitable so far into the north, because the Gulf Stream goes up there and up to Svalbard and further into the Arctic Ocean. Actually, it splits a little bit to the west and to the north. However, on the other side, the water comes back out again on the west side. So actually, this is the east side of Greenland, and there is the so-called East Greenland Current. And the East Greenland Current is pretty cold, and the temperature is between 0 and -1.5 degrees. And it's even freezing, and this is because of the low salinity. So the salinity of the water actually is responsible for water freezing or not freezing. If it has a high salinity, then it can get colder temperatures without freezing. I'm actually pretty excited, as I already said, about this trip, and I will follow Eric and his videos. As he said in the interview, there is a tracker which could be tracked, and of course I will keep you informed on my podcast and bring regularly news about the progress of his trip. So head over now to YouTube, you find the links down below in the show notes. And also visit Eric's online shop, he actually has his personal brand. Of course you can see this in the YouTube videos. Actually, this is no bullshit, just sailing. I like it very much because it's exactly what it implies. There is no bullshit talks, no blah blah, no cocktails and beaches, it's really just sailing. As you all know, sailing is big fun, and it's even more fun in the North Atlantic. So stay tuned until the next time, when there will be a new episode of Schiff Captain Mannschaft. Vielen Dank!